everybody. Welcome to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously, but who does yawn real big sometimes.
I am really currently awake. I'm really awake right now.
It seems like currently. You are in joke-telling mode based on how far open your gullet was just now. Oh, man.
Yeah. I've seen if I could swallow the whole microphone. Yeah, no, just coming off a big boy sickness. Big boy sick. Big sick.
What kind of big boy sick?
Oh, with the fevers, you know, and the visions.
Oh, love sick.
Yeah, that's love sick?
Yeah. You're love sick? Feeling some love sick?
I don't think so.
Oh.
No.
Like sick. What kind of sick is there?
Like fevers, like having a fever and being really
ill.
Yeah,
it's love sick. You get you is that what love it is? With someone.
I thought it was
like
COVID.
I don't like you anymore and then oh.
The test said it was COVID. But I guess oh. It could have been that too. I don't know.
They don't test for lovesick, but they
I
should.
I don't think so. Yeah. They swabbed a lot of stuff. They didn't swab that part, tell you that much.
Yeah, I gotta swab your love parts. You feeling okay?
Not currently.
You look great.
I appreciate that. Amy told me I couldn't go to work today because, quote, I have the sick eyes. I said, I don't really know what that means. And then I had Stella look at my face and she goes, oh, yeah, you look really fucked up. Okay.
Did you tell your boss, I can't come in today, I have the sick eyes?
Well, so I called my boss and he was like, hey, funny story, half the office is currently out with the flu this morning. So
Sick eyes.
I said, oh, okay, well, then it's a popularity contest, I guess.
So the whole office has flu.
Yes. Yeah. Half the office has flu. The other half of the office, I assume, is incubating flu for the next couple
of days. Other half
of
the office did not do a lot of kissing in the office.
But no, it was, I have not been that sick in 10 years, maybe something like that.
When did this happen? You didn't text me and tell me you were sick. However, now that on retrospect, you did leave many of my text messages the last few days, unreplied to. Which I generally take personally, but now I'm thinking maybe that was more of a you thing than a me thing.
This is probably because I was busy having visions. It was awful. I woke up Sunday, and I just had the most horrific, like, wild fever sleep, you know, where, like, you're not awake, you're not asleep, your brain is just, like, going 1,000 miles an hour. And I finally woke up at, like, 7. Amy was getting up and getting ready to go do something. And I cracked open one eye and just said, help me. She kind of looked over from the end of the bed. She's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Go get the thermometer. And so she came back and she hit me with the thermometer. And we have one of those, like, where it's like you press on the head.
Forehead. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she pressed it on the head. And usually, if it's like everything's cool, it'll just go like beep. And then if you have like a fever, it'll be like beep, 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 beep. And so Amy pressed it on my head, and it made a whistling noise. I didn't know.
It's a tea kettle up there.
I was like, ooh. And I squinted to look at the number was red. I said, what does that say? Because I literally could not read it. I was so bleary. She goes, it says 105. I said,
Jesus Christ, oh. Really?
I said, that's awful high, isn't it? Because I usually run kind of cold anyway. My normal body temperature is like 96, 96.2, something like that.
Mine too. How interesting.
Yeah. So 105 for me is...
That's 100. That's a dead for a normal man.
It's a whole bunch. So I got in a cold shower and got back and sat up in bed and scanned myself a few more times, and it got down into like the 103s, the 104s, and I was like, okay,
brain's not cooking anymore.
This
I guess we're
manageable.
Fine.
It's manageable. I'm like, Amy, no need to fry eggs on this guy's gourd. You can go do that on the stove.
And she's like, I had a half dozen ready to go, so that's that's upsetting to hear.
So that was yesterday. It was really fun. It was a good time. Amy did a great job taking care of me and making sure I didn't die. And
I mean, that's what you want in a partner for sure.
Really, literally the best thing. Best thing anyone's ever done for me. And then today's.
And here you are the next day.
Just a few hours later, and here I am recording a world famous podcast.
We could have done this a different day.
I know, but I'm real busy the rest of the week.
All right. So, well, I don't know. Maybe it'll be fun.
It could be. It easily could be. So how was your week?
My week was... I was on spring break last week. You okay. could tell I was on spring break because it was 30 degrees the whole right. time.
I said a hard time telling who you were on spring break because I really can't tell the difference between when you're working and when you're not working. So there's
that's
that
not nice to say. It's really nice to say. But it's nice to say. Honest. Now I understand why you say it.
Yeah.
But it's not nice to say. I still work, you know, I'm a program director. I direct a BA program.
Right. So there is still directing to do.
I mean, lots of directing.
Yeah.
Lots of directing. Like this, I pointed this way. I pointed that way.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yep.
A few times I said.
Yep. Did you have the little wand too? Do you have to?
Yeah. I did. Now it's tough because I am literally a program of one when it comes to faculty members.
It's you just point the wand at yourself.
Yeah. And I am not good at following direction. I am obstinate and I will not do it. So it was a non-productive week, but I was pretty busy trying to get myself to do stuff. Thank you for asking. That's about it. Now we're back at school and everything's great.
That's awesome. So cool.
We're on the downhill toward summer break.
Awesome.
And that's crazy because again, it's like March 10th right now.
Yeah. So you'll be out what, like middle of April, something like that?
April 21st, I think is our last day. It's wild. It's crazy.
I like that I even joked with middle of April and you still managed to nail it.
Yeah.
I wasn't serious at middle of April. And yet here we are.
I know. So anyway, I do have the best job. Thank you for asking. Let's see. So we'll get into it today. Oh, we ran a pretty big ad campaign the last few days. So we've generated, you know, quite a few new listeners, which I think is really exciting.
Great.
Right? However, we couldn't. It's great. Yes. broad strokes, awesome. Now, I will say we advertise on Spotify. And on Spotify, you can't really necessarily like granularly target your audience.
Sure. Right? Yeah. People that are like, you know, ghost adjacent or people that are generally creeps. No, you mean you can't do stuff like that.
No, because that's our bread and butter. If you advertise on Facebook and Instagram for all the reasons that none of us like Mark Zuckerberg, mm-hmm. like what they have going for them is you can very, very directly say like creeps who like watching ghost hunters by themselves at 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. And we have all of those. And hello, everybody. But on Spotify, it's much less. So we cast a wider net. Mm-hmm. And so based on the reviews, the comments we've gotten on some of our comments, some of our episodes since then, I think it might be helpful to do a little exercise here just to do some level setting for everyone. Oh,
great idea.
Because like if this may be the podcast for you, it may not be, you know, and, mm-hmm. and we want everyone to be comfortable.
Let's figure it out right now. We're at the 9 minute mark. Let's fucking go.
Right? Let's go. Ready? So I have a test that I want to try. You good with that?
Yeah. Yeah. I've had lots of tests the last few days. So okay. Do more.
It's a really easy one. Ready? It goes like this. Black lives do matter.
Okay.
Okay, now it's just us.
Okay, cool.
So I think that's going to do it for us. I will say we've had some politically opposed comments, but actually from people who seem to like the show anyway. And hey, I want to say big tent.
We're building bridges. We're building bridges.
Bridges of ghosts. Mm-hmm. Now, it's hard to walk on those bridges because they are incorporeal. But we're building them, and we are hoping to make that. So if you don't agree with our political views, that's okay. Most of the show is not that, and we're so happy to have you. I will say, if you would be nicer on Spotify comments, that would save me from having to delete those comments, which would be nice. But we do. We cherish you. We cherish everybody. Anyway, do you want to hear a ghost story?
Oh, yeah, absolutely at this point. Sure.
So we're going to do a ghost story now. We got a lot of actually surprisingly very good feedback on our Ozarks suite.
Hey, okay.
I think people love a theme is what I'm picking up on.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Your theme, looking at your hoodie today and your sick eyes is fever.
Survival. Yeah. Surviving. Yeah. That's my,
and I love, and hey, it's working for you, and I love it.
I appreciate that. I really do.
So I think we'll introduce a new theme tonight. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be the first story in our National Parks suite.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
don't know if you know this, but national parks are apparently suffering from some layoffs recently. That's making it hard to do their job.
I did hear something. There's like one park ranger for all of Yosemite or something like that. I thought, well, that's interesting. I guess I can just leave my trash there now because yeah. No one's going to say anything.
The good news is it is the bear fighting ranger. So that's the one you want to keep on there. So yeah, I think it's okay.
They tried to fire him and,
and that was, there was going to be a second part to that joke, but that was 7 degrees ago.
Oh my gosh.
Are you okay?
I'm good. Totally good. Absolutely.
All right. So we're going to celebrate our national parks in the best way we know how by telling lots of weird ghost stories from them. So, and one other note. I'm going to read a lot of direct quotes today, more than usual.
Okay. I like that.
Because they're very good. And which is a reminder to me to let you all know, if you didn't know this before, we always put our show notes in the bottom of the description on our podcast. So you can always find our notes there if you are interested. Mm. So let's get going. Ingram Cecil Connor the Third. That's okay. His third.
Ingram Cecil Connor.
Ingram Cecil
Ingram, Connor Cecil three. Connor Three. Okay. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Ingram Cecil Connor Third was born on November 5th, 1946, in Winter Haven, Florida.
Okay.
Do you know this part of Florida?
I do. I think if I recall correctly, I believe that part of Florida just had a tornado go through it earlier today. I do.
Today?
Today. Literally today. I mean, as the listener flies 10 days ago from you all. But for us, today. Yes.
How'd it go for them?
I think if you're someone who is sensitive to tornadoes, I think it went poorly for you. So.
Is that good?
I mean, it's Floridians. I mean, it's basically all like.
Yeah,
alligator skin and lanais, so people don't really, they don't mind that stuff so much.
Okay. I do like naming a town Winter Haven. Mm-hmm. It's very direct.
Yes.
Yes. Please come spend all your money here.
Is it Winter Haven? I mean, I'm thinking of Winter Garden. Everything's winter something down there. It's all trying to, you know, there's Winter Haven.
So there may have been no tornado, and someone listening who was living in Winter Haven may have been in total panic thinking, do we have a fucking tornado 10 days ago I missed? What? How many drugs have I been on? No, it's not. Maybe not. Maybe not. I don't
who
know.
Who knows? Who can tell, really? I'm not. Hard to say. I'm certainly not going to look it up.
Anyway, so Ingram liked to go by the name Graham, which is better than Ingram for sure.
Yes.
His mother was Avis Snively Connor.
Okay. And what did she call herself? Because I can't imagine it was that.
It was Avis.
Avis? Okay.
Avis. Like the car. She's second best wife that her husband ever had.
Yeah.
Isn't that Avis's thing? We want to be second best? I hope that's true or else that joke didn't land at all.
That's fine. And the Avis people are on the phone right now, actually.
We have no money. Please don't sue us. We've alienated half of America. Please don't sue us. And then Graham's father was Ingram Cecil Connor II.
Obviously. Yeah. I know that works.
He liked to go by the name Coondog.
There we go. Finally.
That's the Florida I remember. Graham had one sibling, a sister named Little Avis.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that was on the birth certificate.
Right.
But I don't know that it wasn't on the birth certificate.
what a kick in the teeth for like the next born in a family. Like, you know, I know we called you Gertrude or whatever, but you look like your older sister. So we're going to call you little older sister and you will be her doll. So
not ideal. So I hope you like this bonnet because you're wearing it for the next 37 years.
Now, if you could just squeeze yourself into this American Girl doll backpack with the little aquarium hood on it, we will get on our way.
We paid $90 for it, so you're going to use it a lot. Let's see. Graham's father was a World War World War II. That makes more sense. Flying ace.
Okay. All right.
And he was decorated with the Air Medal,
mm-hmm.
which was a medal that actually was created during or immediately after World War II for people who did good stuff in the air.
Okay. Yes.
Acrobats, pilots,
jugglers. Yes, absolutely.
All those people, I think. And now we've lost all the vets. Cool. So now on February 22nd, 1956, Graham saw Elvis Presley perform in Waycross, Georgia.
Ooh, life-changing.
Life-changing. Yeah. I mean, we've been to Graceland. That's what it's called. Mm-hmm. And we've been there.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've seen...
Change our lives.
And I've seen an Elvis impersonator stripper before. So that's like almost the same thing, too.
I hate to ask this in case the answer is no. Have you actually seen an Elvis Presley impersonator stripper before?
Yes. I mean, he didn't strip all the way, but enough.
Well, depending on what state you're
there
in,
was it's a not point, allowed. So. There was a point where it was just like the white tank top and the white boxer shorts, and everybody's like, I'm good.
Did a stripper go down to
more
tank top and on. Boxer shorts?
Yes, exactly.
Was this Fat Elvis stripper?
This was Fat Elvis stripper. Not super fat.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. But...
This wasn't at your bachelor party.
It was not at my bachelor.
Yeah, you were there. So,
and I was there for all of yours. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what? You know what? Never mind. I don't want to know.
It's fine.
I don't know. Nah. If you want to know where Patrick saw a semi-fat Elvis Presley stripper stripped down to only undershirt and boxers, let us know in the comments. Anyway, so he sees Elvis Presley in 1956, and in some ways, this totally changes Graham's life. Before that, he has never even considered putting banana on a peanut butter sandwich. But now he's like...
It's all you can think of.
Oh, my God. So yeah. I can't get out of my head. But no, of course, he sees Elvis. He's like, holy shit. Like, this is incredible. And then he thinks, like, music is really something.
Mm. Big discovery.
I mean, if your music is like, listen to me blow across this jug for your entire life until you're like 12, and then you see fucking Elvis Presley, you're like, oh shit, music is a thing. That's kind of cool.
That's true.
Yeah. Now, both of Graham's parents were alcoholics, and both of them also suffered from depression.
Right.
So on December 23rd, which is it's so close to Christmas. Mm-hmm.
Almost made it.
Almost. 1958, he did almost make it. Cecil II shoots himself.
Oh, no.
Yeah. 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 There's never a good time for that to happen.
Right. Yes. Absolutely.
Never. December 23rd is especially tough, I think.
It's just for the holidays. So tough.
Yeah. I thought you said just for the holidays. I thought, that's not a funny joke to say because that's not true. It occurred to me that you actually said
that's either a really deep, dark cut or I misheard you. And we'll just go with whichever way the audience likes it.
So he's no longer with us. Now, Avis remarries to a man named Robert Parsons.
Okay.
And so Robert adopts Graham and his sister, and they take the Parsons last name.
Okay.
Avis and Robert went on to have one new child together. And this is a daughter named Diane.
Okay.
So there's three of them. So in case you're counting, Graham's interest in music continues, and eventually he starts playing in rock and roll cover bands.
Okay.
So he'd play at like other schools. He would play in country clubs owned by his stepfather. So if that gives you an idea of like kind of like the life he's living.
Yeah. And what year is this at this point?
1958.
Okay. So he's
nine or 1960.
I'm trying to think of what rock and roll bands around in this time for him to be covering.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really don't know at that point.
And you have nothing. I'd say he probably met Marty McFly at some point.
I would say, yeah. Yeah.
And was like, I don't know, are my kids going to love that? And Marty's like, oh, yeah, your kid's going to love that.
Also, call your cousin Chuck and tell him just don't get into photography.
It's going to get real weird.
It's going to get, and please. It's going to just silly a lot of things. Just call your cousin Chuck and tell him not to do that.
So he's playing rock and roll, which is fun. Now, Avis's father, so Graham's grandfather, he was a citrus fruit magnate.
I imagine most people in Florida were. That's like,
I think that's it. Yeah. That was the whole thing for a while. So he's got all sorts of property in Winter Haven and in Waycross, Georgia. And so they're, so again, the grandpa on the mom's side is a fruit magnate.
Mm-hmm.
The stepdad owns country clubs.
Right.
So Graham's, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's one of the people that plays in a band because he really doesn't have to do anything else is what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. He makes the other band members so fucking angry. Just so mad.
You really want us to split this four ways? You really want us to split the $9 we just made four ways?
Graham attends a private college prep high school
mm-hmm.
called the Bowles School in Jacksonville, which is amazing because I didn't think anyone prepared for college in Jacksonville at all. Oh, I wish I had my rim shot button here. Yeah, it's on a different thing. Anyway, but eventually he transfers to the Winter Haven High School. So public school, but he flunks out of that his junior year.
Mm.
And he thinks, well, I guess back to Bowles. So they go back to private school.
Well, they can't kick me out.
Do the checks keep coming around? I still have a homeroom. While he was still in school, there it is, he started playing with his first professional band, the Shilohs. Which I think is professional, I think is used in its loosest term.
Yeah. They made $9 one time. That's basically, professional.
And that is, professional. They played coffee houses, high school auditoriums, and Hootenannies.
Do the Hootenannies pay well?
I can't imagine they do.
I imagine they're probably paying corn and whiskey. That's my assumption.
Pelted with nickels at that point. Like, I hope I gather them all up.
You're playing like the bar from Roadhouse behind a chain link fence. I'm like, oh, okay, that's fine. Money spends all the same.
Hey, you're the Healy band. Now, this is a professional band. so they're making money, but he's still in high school. So it's like, we can't play too many shows. And sometimes the other members of the band, who I think were, at least some of them were also in high school, they were like, we're leaving this area to go play. Can you come? And he's like, no, I have school. So he would only play in local shows, but he did make it up sometimes. I guess the Shilohs were actually pretty good because he would make it up with them sometimes to New York City.
Oh, wow.
And they would play regular appearances at the cafe. It says radio. What is it called? Raffio, I think. I don't know. Anyway, my notes app has corrected this to radio. It's not radio. There's a cool cafe on Bleecker Street in Greenwich Village that really was awesome, and it's not called Cafe Radio.
One of the other cool places in Greenwich Village.
Totally. So cool. Search Greenwich Village Bleecker Street Cafe R, and it's probably the one that comes up.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll wait.
Yeah. Nobody? So you get it. So,
yeah, okay.
So multiple members of the Shilohs are in high school, I think. So, they had a meeting with Albert Grossman, who's a pretty famous folk and rock and roll manager from years past. And Grossman is like, these are kids. Please leave my office. It's not going to work. So in the spring of 1965, when Graham is a senior in high school, the Shilohs disband.
Oh.
It's tough.
Like all the greats.
All the greats. If a band exists past high school age, they're less good than the greats.
Exactly. Don't trust anyone older than 18. That's what I've always heard.
Oh, boy. I've been going down that rabbit hole. So a few months after they disband, Graham, of course, finishes his senior year of high school. On graduation day, June 5th, 1965, Graham's mother dies of complications from alcoholism.
Oh. No.
You make a joke?
No, it's very sad. This is very sad. The good news is it's not even close to Christmas, which is, nice.
You really did make a joke. All right.
I
thought I was making a joke, and you know what? Joke's on me. So she passes away, obviously very sadly. Now, it turns out that Robert Parsons, his adopted father, had been having an affair with Diane's nanny.
Oh, gross.
And they were married very shortly after Avis's death.
Oh, super gross.
So super, super bad, super gross, super, super bad. Graham goes to Harvard.
Oh, okay. So failed out of a public school in Florida and then straight to Harvard.
Yeah. Hmm. It's actually not as surprising a path as I think we would all like to think it would be. I did fail out of public school, but my parents have a shit ton of money. Can mm-hmm. I come here? Yeah. Oh, yes, you can.
Your endowment's looking a little thin there. What if we just shore that up a little bit, huh?
You know what? You don't even have to come here. Here's your degree. Yeah. You're a doctor now. So he goes to Harvard for one semester, and he thinks, nah, I don't think so. So he drops out.
They misunderstood the whole money thing because they're still making me do homework and shit.
I guess our endowment wasn't big enough, mm-hmm. so I'm out. Now, of course, Graham's not really motivated to earn a degree and get a career because he's got all this money. And plus, when he turns 21, Graham starts to receive his trust fund income from his grandfather.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Of $30,000 a year.
In what year is this?
In enough years that today it's worth $250,000.
For doing nothing.
$250,000 every year for your life for doing nothing. So he decides this is a good time to dive all the way into music.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And probably lots of recreational drugs because.
Oh boy, are we going to talk about recreational drugs? So Graham and some other folk musicians from Boston, they form a group called the International Submarine Band.
We've already gotten into recreational drugs, I guess, is what I'm
saying. Yeah. Yeah, we're in our Beatles era for sure. Now, this will not prove to be the most insane band name that you're going to hear tonight.
Okay, good.
So, yeah, prepare yourself. They move to the Bronx for a short time, but then they head out west to the City of Angels.
Vancouver.
It's a B-minus joke.
Okay, good. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I like it.
I'm feeling like F-plus right now, so B-minus is great.
F stands for fuck me. I'm fuck me plus right now. Please extra. Please let me die. Why are you making me record tonight? I just want to die. They get signed to a label. Actually, they start recording music.
Hey.
And the band actually even appears in a Peter Fonda film in 1967, a film called The Trip.
Hey, okay.
Which I've never heard of before, but hey.
No one has. It's okay.
No, but Peter Fonda was a big deal. I've heard of him. That's okay. So they're performing, they perform as a band in the background, which I actually brought me to a question that I wanted to ask you. What is your, putting on a spot here a little bit, what is your favorite instance of a real band being a band in a movie?
Of a real band being a band in a movie.
Yeah. And I was originally going to say, what's your favorite instance of a real band playing a fake band in a movie? But I think it doesn't matter.
Okay.
It's a real band and they're in a movie as like a background band.
Okay. Definitely going to be Cannibal Corpse in Ace Ventura Pet Detective. Got to be.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's the one. That's the one I always think of.
Let's even think about that one.
What about you?
My number one was Tito and Tarantula from Dust Till Dawn.
God, that's such a good one. That whole sequence. That's
a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. But I also have written down here as a note, just in case you had picked the same, because I thought there was a chance you picked the same one, because
sure,
we share an affinity for From Dust Till Dawn. But in a cool way, not in a weird way.
Yeah.
Like a cool, normal way. I had a runner-up, which was, actually, as you alluded to before, it was a Jeff Healey band in Roadhouse, as a matter of fact.
I was wondering why that was on the tip of your tongue. I was like, geez.
You know, the fucking Healy band.
Weird. What? Okay.
Actually, and thinking about the Jeff Healey band in Roadhouse is what made me change the question from band has to be a fictional band in the movie to band could be a real, like playing themselves. Because Jeff Healey band was real and really did it. Ace Ventura. That's a good one. That's a good one. Anyway, so they're in this Peter Fonda flick, and one of their songs was actually even put up for the soundtrack. Whew. But the soundtrack people were like, I don't think that's right for us. So no, thank you. Not long after this, despite lots of fame, the International Submarine Band disbands.
Oh.
But right around this time, This says David Cross. Is that right? Or did I just type David Cross because I was thinking about David Cross?
Thinking David Crosby?
That's the one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I know where this one's going, so I'm pretty sure it's Crosby.
Oh, you've heard of Graham Parsons before?
Yeah, maybe. Just a little bit.
Okay, so right around this time, David Crosby and not David Cross. Although, if they had gone with David Cross, it would have been also phenomenal.
If they want to make a Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young documentary and they don't choose David Cross to play David Crosby, I really don't know what they're doing.
What a mistake. What a mistake.
It's right there waiting for you guys.
So David Crosby, thank you, and Michael Clark leave this little band called The Birds.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of it.
And so Parsons auditions, and he's added to the band. He makes it.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's apparently a very good musician, despite all the drugs that we'll talk about very shortly. So he's now part of The Birds, which, of course, is a legendary fucking band. This is great news.
Right.
Except for the fact that, and this is a quote, he was not regarded as a full member by the band's label, Columbia Records. Consequently, when the Birds' recording contract was renewed on February 29th of 1968, it was only original members, Roger McGinn and Chris Hillman, who signed it. They would not allow Graham Parsons to sign because he's not technically a bird. Parsons was hired as a sideman, technically speaking, and received, therefore, a salary from McGinn and Hillman.
He's like, I'm already getting a salary from my grandpa for doing jack shit, so I really don't need another one here.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually who cares for him. Asked about this later, Hillman would say, quote, Graham was hired. He was not a member of the Birds, ever. He was on salary. That was the only way we could get him to turn up. So I don't think they would even have offered to pay him salary from their own pockets if he wouldn't, because he wouldn't show up. This was also the same deal afforded to another sideman, Kevin Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about Kevin Kelly, but I hope he also had a really rich grandpa. Otherwise, got real fucked by the Birds. But they did give Graham and Kevin equal billing.
Okay.
Which is
sure
certainly not nothing.
Yeah.
They go on to record the album Sweetheart of the Rodeo, which ends up being a country music project they record in Nashville. Wasn't initially meant to be a country music thing, but then Graham was like, we should do this a country music thing. They're like, hey, fine, we're on drugs, let's do it. So they go.
We should record in the middle of a rodeo ring, guys. I know it sounds crazy.
And also, we're all dressed as clowns.
Yeah.
Does that sound good? I think it sounds pretty good.
It's hard for me to squeeze the drums into this little barrel out here, but I'm going to do it. And it's going to sound awesome.
And when the horse comes by, you will bang on the drum. It's going to be awesome. So they go to Nashville. They record the album. It includes two songs written by Parsons, along with songs written by Bob Dylan, Woody Guthrie, and Merle Haggard.
Oh, man, I know almost all of those guys.
I would love to know which one of them you don't, because that's it's really telling. While they're recording this album, though, Parsons is still under contract with his old record label from the International Submarines or whatever. So that hasn't expired. He never formally got out of it. So that label threatens legal action for the new record because it's not on their label. And as a result, McGinn goes in and replaces Parsons' vocals with his own vocals. And in 1973, in an interview with Cameron Crowe, Parsons said that McGinn, quote, McGinn did the vocals himself and fucked it up. In 1968, the Birds were planning a tour of South Africa.
As you do.
I guess. Did you ever see the documentary? Was it? It's Waiting for Sugar
District 9? Yeah, I've seen that documentary.
No. Sorry. Yeah, I mean, yes, that's an important one, too. I'm going to Google this. It's really important. Searching for Sugar Man. Hey, if you haven't seen it, Searching for Sugar Man, genuinely, fucking great documentary. If you've ever wondered about how someone who's a super talented musician around this same time can have no success in America, but then have like fucking breakout success in apartheid South Africa. And I truly, like, it's a great story, and his music's so good, and the apartheid part is difficult,
right.
But go check it out.
That's so unnecessary for the backdrop of the music? I'm confused here.
Not for the music so much as for, like, his life and okay. stuff. Like, he was, I don't know, Rodrigo was, what, you know what, just go watch it.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're not sponsored by Searching for Sugar Man, so fuck off. anyway, so they're going to go to South Africa. Now, Parsons is very opposed. He's like, we can't go to South Africa.
Right.
He's very anti-apartheid. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm not going. Mm-hmm. This leads to a very serious argument, and it leads Parsons to leave the Byrds.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Just hearing the residual listeners drop off.
Yeah.
The new ones, you know, and so everything, it's like a sieve, yeah. You know? Okay. Now it's really just us. Now, so he quits the band. Now, when he quits the band, they're in England. So he's far away from home. He's like, well, now I don't have anywhere to go. But this is when he meets Mick Jagger and Keith Richards.
Oh, okay.
So Keith lets Parsons stay at his house for a while, and the two become really close friends. Supposedly, this may be apocryphal, but supposedly Parsons reintroduced Richards to country music, which then for a while, if you know the Rolling Stones catalog, but that they were pretty influenced by country music for a substantial chunk of their career. Huh. That may have been Graham Parsons' influence.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so once Graham is done doing drugs with Keith Richards for 6 months in a row, he goes back to L.A. and he forms a brand new band. Mm-hmm. And this is the one.
This is the big one.
This is the big one in terms of best band name of all time.
Okay.
Less so in terms of most successful band of all time.
Right.
But a very good name. This band is called the Flying Burrito Brothers.
Yes.
Very good, and it sounds like what I would call a band if I started one. I'll tell you though, it doesn't go great. They only lasted about a year, but man, it was quite a year. They sat down to record their first album, which is called The Gilded Palace of Sin. And you always want to like tie your burritos into the idea of sin. And,
yeah.
Lucifer and all that. Yeah. Their drummer, a guy named Eddie. I got to start paying more attention while I'm typing this. It's not Eddie Hot. That's not right. But Eddie something was, quote, unable to perform adequate takes due to a substance abuse problem. They tried to record two songs and they were like, this is not going to work.
We just started being a band and you can't even like do the first song of being a band.
Yeah. It's not ideal. So they kick Eddie out and they use session drummers for the album and they replace him for the tour. And now I'll just read a few lines verbatim from the Wikipedia page here, if you don't mind. The Gilded Palace of Sin was commercially unsuccessful. Critic Robert Christou called it an ominous, obsessive, tongue-in-cheek country rock synthesis, absorbing rural and urban, traditional and contemporary, at point of impact.
It sounds cool.
Sure. Okay. Parsons suffered from fear of flying, and the band toured via train. The band.
Boy, you really don't. You don't limit yourself on tour. Like only specific, you know, cities and dates, but when you have to go by a train schedule,
you're a little locked in. It continues. The band members lost most of their money in a perpetual poker game, and their concerts were met with bewilderment. Parsons was taking psilocybin and cocaine, so his performances were erratic. In fact, gives you an idea of how the tour went for the Flying Burrito Brothers or whatever. Burrito band. Oh, Flying Burrito Brothers. That was right. So they crawl through this tour. They finish the tour. Just digging their nails in and just dragging themselves through it. And then they go back to LA. But things there aren't great either. Mm-hmm. Here's another quote. By this time, Parsons' drug use had increased to the point where new songs were rare. And most of his time was spent partying with the Rolling Stones.
I mean, I really can't blame him at that point.
I mean, especially like you've got this trust fund. Like, am I going to do work or am I going to party with the Rolling Stones every day? I don't know. So the Flying Burrito Band is, they're not doing great. The label is panicking a little bit because they're like, we thought Flying Burrito Band was going to be a big moneymaker and we're not sure what happened, but we don't like it. So the label is like, listen, like you guys are terrible. Our thing now is we need to recoup our investment in you. Mm-hmm. So we are going to pitch you as a straight up country band. So their manager puts together a recording session where the band plays honky tonk staples and country versions of contemporary pop covers.
Okay.
Okay.
Doesn't sound great. I'm not liking this.
It doesn't. Though I did listen. What was the one I listened to? It was pretty good. I don't know if this counts in that, but he does a cover of Love Hurts.
Oh, okay.
Which is actually very good. Now, that's not like a honky-tonk staple that he's doing, but it's contemporary pop song cover. I think that's probably where it came from. So there's something there.
Okay.
Not a lot there. Mm-hmm.
It's basically, Johnny Cash's resurgence with the four American albums.
Oh, man. Well, yeah. Oof, boy.
So
he did it, though, in a way that was so fucking good.
This is true.
Yeah. Also, like, he recorded songs about, drug use, and he was like, I know how to make this real dark and awful and wonderful. Anyway, so that record ultimately is scrapped in favor of a second album of originals on an extremely reduced budget. I don't know why that is. Again, the only song that I've heard from that is A Love Hurts, which was pretty good. I don't know why you'd go away from that and be like, actually, you know what? Originals from the Flying Burrito Band Flying Burrito Brothers is the way to go. But they decided to do it. Do you want to guess how it did?
I'm going to guess it did poorly, is my guess.
The Flying Burrito Brothers disband.
Oh.
But for reasons I didn't pick up on from this article, the label still likes Graham.
Mm-hmm. Sure. He sounds lovable. He sounds like a guy you just can't say no to.
I think he's like the Elon of this in some ways. Yeah. It's like, I don't know why, but like, I want to hitch my rocket to that idiot. Like, it's just
the trust fund baby who has failed out of every single band he's ever been in.
Now, he's got certainly musical talent. So the label, I guess, sees that, but it's not really like label's MO is right. To be like, I don't know, you're not selling music, but I really like your art. It's not really what labels are for. Historically, at least. So they sign him to a solo deal. At this point, Graham moves in with his producer, Terry Melcher.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, the two shared a penchant for cocaine and heroin.
Oh.
And the sessions were largely unproductive.
Wow.
With Parsons eventually losing interest in the project. The master tapes were lost. It is unclear who took them. So Parsons is a mess. Mm-hmm. Now he decides to go along with the Rolling Stones on their 1971 UK tour. And his hope at this point is to be signed to the Stones' new record label that they had just launched at this point. Keith Richards puts him up in Keith's own French villa.
Oh, wow.
Which I imagine is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, probably smells terrible too. Just
just smells like sex in every room, and it's part of the charm. Mm. Now they're recording "Exile on Main Street" there at the villa, and the thought was, well, if Graham's here, he can help us out with the album.
Oh, okay, sure,
sure. I mean, he's obviously a very talented musician, supposedly. Here's a quote. He contributed little to the process.
Let's see how he fails up this time.
His drug use and his constant quarreling with his girlfriend led Keith Richards' girlfriend, a woman named Anita Pallenberg, to tell Keith, you gotta get this fucking guy out of here. He's gotta go. And Keith is not a stupid man. He knows the right thing to do here. And he tells Graham, like, you gotta go.
Yep.
And another quote, Parsons attempted to rekindle his relationship with the band on their 1972 American tour to no avail. So he's really fucked up that relationship. He fucked it up good. Mm-hmm. So Parsons goes back to the US, and decides to do a one-off concert with the Flying Burrito Brothers.
I remember when life was good. Life is so good.
That one year we were slowly getting canceled by our label. Ah, yes.
As we crawled across the U.S. on Amtrak. It was fantastic.
So they're in D.C. for this, but while he's in D.C., he meets an artist named Emmy Lou Harris.
Oh.
So I don't know how far Emmy Lou Harris's fame extends to our, I don't know if it's she's a big name in our UK friends, but she's a fucking legend. Truly. And so they meet, and Parsons asks Emmy Lou Harris if she'll help him record his first solo album. Which feels to me like not a solo album.
Right.
Quite frankly.
I'm recording a solo album. I'd like you to do some of the work, though. Just, you know.
Yeah. And I guess maybe his original label dropped him at some point, but she says yes. And then, quote, it came as a surprise to many when Parsons was signed to Reprise Records by Mo Austin in mid-1972. He records a solo album called GP. And the band is made up of several members of Elvis's TCB band. Who are so desperate for work now, I guess.
If we don't get this job, I got to go back to stripping. I'm not doing that.
Patrick's going to talk about me in the podcast in 40 years. I can't have that. No, thank you. Joke's on you, TCB band member.
Still talking about you.
This album had 6 new songs from Parsons, along with several country covers. And Emmy Lou Harris does some vocals on the record. And then they start touring together as a duet. But the problem here is Parsons cannot afford the TCB band for tour.
Right.
Obviously. They're taking care of business, and he's got very little of that for them to be attracted to. So he hires some other musicians, throws them together, and he calls them Graham Parsons and the Fallen Angels. The road manager for this tour, his name's going to be important. This is a man named Phil Kaufman, who had served time with Charles Manson on Terminal Island.
Hey, okay. So a little 6 degrees of separation there.
Yeah. We did that probably at some point, right?
Yes.
We talked about Manson before.
We've talked about Charles Manson before? Yeah, I think we've talked about
it.
Yeah. On the show? Well, I don't know if we talked about it on the show before. I know
you
he
and
is.
I know you and I talk about him literally daily, but I'm saying, man, come on. Anyway, so Phil Kaufman, he's apparently very effective at making sure Graham Parsons steers clear of drugs, and he limits his alcohol during shows.
Right.
Which is, that's...
Yeah, it's... That's the secret.
That's
right
best
there.
You know for.
That's the secret right there. Don't be rip shit on heroin when you go out to play on stage.
I have an idea, and it's be sober while you're doing work. I don't know. Do you like it? Here's a quote. At first, the band was under rehearsed and played poorly. GP, the album that they were meant to promote, of course, never charted in the Billboard 200. So Parsons then goes on to plan what would be his final album. He doesn't know this.
Right, album. Spoiler alert. But,
This is a ghost podcast. The album is called Grievous Angel.
No more Fallen Angels.
No, now it's Grievous Angel.
Now he's pissed.
Now he's going to take a little bit of revenge. Had he lived for another album, I assume it would be called Angel of Vengeance. So Grievous Angel, which was actually released posthumously, for this album, Parsons once again brings on Emmylou Harris and the TCB band. He actually seems to finally have gotten his addiction under control, but mm-hmm. I would say under at least enough control mm-hmm. to record an album with some discipline. Quote, limiting his intake of alcohol and opiates during most of the sessions.
We'll just use the tapes from those sessions.
We recorded 37 songs for the album, thinking maybe we'll get 16.
28 of them Graham could not tell us the title of, so we just took those right off the top.
Before recording the album, Parsons and Harris played a preliminary four-show mini-tour in June of 1973. Just get, marketing, get people excited. One of the band members, Clarence White, from that mini-tour, was killed 1 month later by a drunk driver while he was loading equipment into his car.
Ooh.
And at White's funeral, Graham Parsons told Phil Kaufman that if he ever died, if Parsons ever died, mm-hmm. he wanted to be cremated in Joshua Tree National Park.
Okay.
Graham Parsons loved Joshua Tree.
Clearly, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's a good reason. It's great. Mm-hmm. You've been to Joshua Tree?
Maybe. I don't know. It's in California. You've
driven through Joshua Tree. Probably. Yeah. Our Death March baseball trip from LA to Phoenix. We went through. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
We didn't stop a lot in Joshua Tree. We did say, how fucking long is this road? A lot while going through Joshua Tree.
Do you think there's anybody out there who gets their remains cremated and spread somewhere spitefully? Because everyone kind of gets their.
I have to imagine.
I mean, somebody has to. But you hear so many people want to get their remains cremated, and then I want it to be spread at this beautiful beach that I remember, or whatever. But you never hear I want you to cremate me, and I want you to sneak into my ex-wife's house, and I want you to put me between the floorboards. In every single room of the house.
Listen.
That's what I want.
When I die, mm-hmm. I want you to cremate me mm-hmm. and then dump me on Allison's head. That fucking bitch. That would be the best. Actually, now I'm going to write a note for Aaron that if I die, God.
I want you to take a 1 gallon jug of Elmer's glue and I want you to turn me into slime. That's what I want you to do.
And here is a list of people I want you to slime with my slime. And I want to be blue. Mm-hmm. I'll be very clear about
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. No glitter.
So blue.
No glitter. Just
no
blue.
No glitter. Spite ashes are a great idea. I think there's, I don't know what it is. There's a business opportunity wrapped up in here somewhere. We'll talk about it after the show. So anyway, he wants to be buried at Joshua Tree, which is great. Now, if you've never been to Joshua Tree, don't know what it is, like Patrick, who has been to Joshua Tree, here are some fun facts.
Wham!
It's named, of course, for the Joshua Tree.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
Which is not actually a tree.
Interesting.
It belongs to the same family as the orchid.
Okay.
It's a flower.
All right. Is it a really big flower?
Huge flower.
Okay.
Not as big a flower as, here's another fun fact.
Wham!
Unrelated, but did you know palm trees are also not trees? They are flowers.
Interesting.
If you ever want to feel like the most insignificant you could possibly feel, just go to California or Hawaii or something and walk around a lot of palm trees and be like, these are flowers. And I've never felt smaller, literally and figuratively.
That's my favorite hobby is actually walk around Southern California and stop people on the street and explain to them that these trees are not trees.
Hey, look. Hey, excuse me. Yeah. Hi. Hey, I'm not from here, but... And they say, yeah, I know. Yeah. Anyway, Joshua trees were named after the biblical Joshua mm-hmm. by early Mormon settlers.
Hmm. Okay. So they were the ones that got it wrong.
Yeah. Are you shocked? You were here for this Salt Air episode. Joshua Tree is another fun fact, is an international dark sky park.
Okay.
You can go and just see actual stars, the way they're meant to be seen with no light pollution. Mm-hmm. Very cool. It contains not one, but two, count them, two deserts. Can you name them, Patrick?
I'm going to go with the Mojave.
That's one.
And the Sonora.
That would have been my guess also. That's not, now that's not accurate. It is Colorado.
Oh,
the I didn't even know was a desert, but I would have said Mojave and Sonora. So you're in good company. Fun fact number, whatever this is. Also, I want to say this is really the most important one by some measures. The characters in Slaughterhouse Run, Apocalypticon 4, go right through Joshua Tree.
Interesting. Do they also spread the remains out?
They, in some ways, yeah. In so, not all cremated, of, but...
Yeah. Not 100% of them leave Joshua Tree.
Yeah. So... anyway, it's a real, it's a super deserty kind of desert place. It's so deserty, Patrick didn't recognize he was going through it when he drove through it.
No clue.
Because it's so much desert. if you're a recreational drug user in California, Joshua Tree, I will guarantee, it's just your favorite place. If you know one person who uses drugs recreationally in California, Joshua Tree's like the place they'll tell you, like, it's my special place. Uh-huh. It's like, yeah, it's, yeah, for sure.
My special place has a parking lot with 500 spots in it, just so you know. It's just my place.
It's so special there. Oh. You wouldn't get it, but I can see. Hey,
look, my special place has its own highway exit. That's interesting.
Also, it's our friend Dave Bloom's favorite place.
Oh, interesting. It's his special place?
It is. I don't think he does drugs, so.
Oh, maybe he should.
I think, if I had to say, like, I know one person who really should start doing recreational drugs, it's Dave. He's got the whole, it's all working for him already. Just fucking pump those drugs in there, bud.
Do you think Dave knows about the U2 album? I'll text him. I'll let him know.
Yeah. I'll let him know. Anyway, so Graham Parsons loves Joshua Tree. Mm. Now, in the summer of 73, Graham's house in Topanga Canyon burns to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
He loses everything he owns except for his guitar and his Jaguar.
Really hard to feel sorry for Graham Parsons at this point. Oh, I'm left with nothing but a trust fund, a guitar, and a 1972 Jaguar XLR.
This fire feels like a staged scene from like a music video.
Yeah.
Like, oh, just me and my Jaguar and my guitar. After the fire, Graham stays with Phil Kaufman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is, I think this is going to be, it's going to prove to be an unhealthy pairing. You tell me what you think. Mm-hmm. But he started really vacationing at Joshua Tree at this point, really in earnest. He would use psychedelics out there.
Sure.
He would experience UFO sightings.
Nothing else to do out there. May as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And the psychedelics and UFOs, I don't think are related.
Okay. Independent. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a coincidence.
Yeah. I think so. He would often take friends out there. He would go with Phil Kaufman, of course, tour manager. And on September 17th, 1973, Graham engages in one of his, quote, recuperative excursions, end quote, at Joshua Tree, with his girlfriend at the time, Margaret Fisher. Also in attendance are his assistant, Michael Martin, and Michael Martin's girlfriend, Dale McElroy.
Okay.
Here's a quote. On both nights of their stay, Parsons retreated to the desert, consuming large amounts of alcohol and barbiturates, while the rest of the group visited bars in Nira Yucca Valley. So he's just going out on his own to do a whole lot of drugs.
All by himself.
With no parental supervision.
Or light. Yeah. Doesn't sound like there's any light.
Correct. Either. Yeah. That's dark sky zone. That's an important thing. Yeah. And this is our boy right around this time, which I think is a good example of.
Is he the one on the right?
It's hard to tell, but he's the one on the right. Yeah.
On the left, just for our podcast listeners, on the left appears to be some sort of a pelt nailed to the wall. So,
but it is surprisingly difficult actually.
Yeah, to tell which one of them is the at first glance, it is hard to tell.
So that's what's going on there with Grant. So on the second day of the trip, September 18th, Martin drives back to LA to get more pot.
Oh, yeah.
They've exhausted the pot stores in one night, which means either they're bad at planning or they're smoking so much pot. And that night, Parsons challenged, and that's a direct quote, mm-hmm. he challenged Fisher and McElroy, the two women there, mm-hmm. To drink with him.
Okay. Seems like a good idea.
Yeah. And it was a challenge because Fisher, his girlfriend, mm-hmm. did not drink at all.
Oh, that's not nice.
And McElroy, who was Martin's girlfriend, was very sick and recovering from illness and did not want to drink.
Oh, I know. I don't know exactly how that feels.
It's called a hangover.
Yeah, well, I think she had the sick eyes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She had the sick
yeah,
eyes.
Yeah, I get it.
It's getting pretty late for her, too, I think.
So Parsons challenges them. They don't feel good to do that. Mm. So then Parsons very generously says, I'll drink for all three of us. He has 6 double tequilas.
Is that okay? That sounds like a fun night.
It sounds like a tough morning. Mm-hmm. 3 of them then went on to the Joshua Tree Inn where they were staying.
Mm.
And here is a photo of the Joshua Tree Inn for you.
Oh,
I literally could not find a better photo of the building.
Very than rustic. This. Very rustic.
Rustic, yes. Is a good word. Yeah.
There's a pool, though. That's got to be nice.
It says there's a pool.
Yeah. Maybe it's somewhere off there in the distance. I don't know.
Maybe it's a mirage. Who knows? Hard to say. But that is that's where they go. So they go to the hotel, and then Parsons immediately buys morphine off some lady. After doing his 6 double tequila shots, mm-hmm. Now, he's in room number 1 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
The woman who sold him the morphine also injected him with said morphine.
Oh, definitely want to do that. Definitely let the drug dealer
inject you with the drugs. Now, you might be surprised to learn she, I guess, overserved him.
Oh, no. Considering she's a doctor, I assume, right?
I don't know who else would be doing that. So he's ODing.
You're sure now, asking me a lot of questions about my weight. Yeah, I know. It's all part of it, though.
So he's OD'd, and Fisher, his girlfriend, who fortunately she again is sober,
mm-hmm.
she says, I think I know what to do. I think he needs an ice cube suppository.
Oh no.
So
maybe they should go back and ask the doctor again.
So she administrates an ice cube suppository. Mm-hmm. To a freaking out Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Then she hauls him into a cold shower.
Okay. Now we're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. That totally counteracts morphine from what I understand.
I guess so.
That's actually what's inside of those Narcan pens. It's actually just ice cold water.
It's very forceful cold water. So she does that, puts ice cubes into him, and then gives him a cold shower. And after the shower, they move to a different room, which is his room. They move into his own room.
Right, right.
Not the doctor's room, which is room number 8. She puts him in the bed and goes out to find some coffee, because that's...
Not much I can do with this. I've literally exhausted all of my options.
Yeah.
I got him wet in a shower, and I put an ice cube in his butt. So
listen, someone's feeling sleepy. How do you wake them up? Cold shower, number 1. Number 2, coffee.
Did either of those things work? No? Well, then on to the next thing.
Well, we'll see if we find the next thing. Do you have any suggestions?
Boy, the next thing to counteract a morphine overdose. I'm going to say putting on old episodes of Laugh-In. I think that's what's going to happen.
Okay, well... you're a man of your time, I'll say, and not a man of this time, thank God, because she leaves to go find coffee. McElroy is going to watch over him, but pretty soon Parsons stops breathing. McElroy tries to resuscitate him. That doesn't go great. She calls an ambulance. Ambulance comes, picks him up. Doctors at the Yucca Valley Hospital declare Parsons dead on arrival. So then Phil Kaufman drives Fisher and McElroy back to LA.
Mm.
then, quote, dispersed the rest of Parsons' drugs in the desert. Now, for our friend Ben to find later, I guess. Probably. Yeah. If
I had to guess. What did I just throw up on? Oh, it's drugs!
Now, here's where things get wild, finally. So, all of Parsons' friends know that he wants to be cremated at Joshua Tree. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, and as I've said, this is a national park. It is not a crematorium. Right. So, that's... Yeah.
I read the website very closely, and they made no mention of any sort of mausoleum services.
So Graham's stepfather, Robert Parsons, he's still alive. He's like, listen, you fucking hippies. No, absolutely not. He's going to come back to me. Mm-hmm. Now, Robert is currently living in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. So he organizes a private ceremony for Graham in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. He arranges for Graham's body to be transported from Joshua Tree to Louisiana through LAX.
Oh, okay. They're not taking the train this time?
No, they figured that ship has sailed. He probably won't mind as much now. Yeah. And so Robert leaves the body in the care of a funeral home in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, put us on a plane and...
Right. Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of... In New Orleans. Yeah, a lot of paperwork.
Yeah. So they put the body into a coffin. Mm-hmm. They put the coffin into a hearse. Mm-hmm. They drive the hearse to LAX. Mm-hmm. And then Phil Kaufman, who, again, I just want to be very clear, is Graham Parsons' road manager.
Right.
Stages an incredible heist.
Oh, no.
Where he and a friend steal the hearse from LAX. With Graham Parsons' body in the back. Oh. I checked so many sources to make sure this was a real story. And this is apparently what happened. So they steal the hearse and they drive it not to New Orleans.
Mm-hmm, obviously.
Back out to Joshua Tree because this is what Graham wanted.
Mm-hmm. Now, Graham was, I don't remember Graham being particular about being cremated in Joshua Tree.
Well, as right? we've noted, it's not a crematorium.
Right.
So let's find out what happens. They get to the park. Mm-hmm. They drive it out into the desert. Mm-hmm. They park the car.
The hearse.
Yes, thank you.
let's get the visual right here.
Yeah,
let's call it a hearse for Joshua Tree right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. They park the hearse, they haul out the coffin out of the back, they set it on the ground, they open the coffin, they fill it with gasoline.
Okie dokie.
And they light a match and drop it inside.
Okay.
This creates, and here's another quote, an enormous fireball.
Gasoline does that every time.
Now, we've talked about this before in the show. How hot does body have to burn to be cremated? It's
pretty hot for a pretty long time. Like they
can
make
gasoline spills do that?
I don't think they'll do that. I think they'll make a big old mess, but I don't think they burn long enough. Especially when they start with an enormous fireball. That I think gets rid of a lot of the gasoline.
Most of that goes out there. Yeah. Oh, to live in the pre-internet age. Like, this will probably work. Let's try it. So they do this. So they're burning his body. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, they steal this fucking corpse from LAX. And so there are some witnesses
right.
and lots of law enforcement, you know, people
right.
of various stripes.
Sure. Yeah.
So finding them is very easy. It's a shockingly short amount of time before the police show up. But by the time they get there, the body is already burning.
Right. Yes.
It's on fire because of the gasoline.
Right.
They dumped in the coffin. So the police, they arrest Kaufman and his friend, who helped him with this. And, and in the end, they are eventually fined $750 for stealing a body.
Okay.
which is about $5,000 today. Now, that's not nothing,
right,
certainly.
Sure.
But holy fuck, are you kidding me? $5,000 to steal a hearse with a body in back and then drive it to the desert and dump gasoline on it and set it on fire? What a bargain.
They're probably thinking, you know what? No harm, no foul. This isn't, nobody got hurt.
They didn't kill him, and that's super important.
Exactly.
Jesus Christ. So then there's also, they call out a fire unit. Eventually, they put out the fire. Mm-hmm. Or it burned out on its own.
Right.
More likely, I think, probably.
I was imagining them like setting a full bore fire hose on this guy's lifeless body inside of a coffin.
The bone. Yeah,
blasting him apart, being like, well,
hey, go, can you, there's bones there and there and there. You know, we need those. Can you get them?
I think this counts as being spread throughout Joshua Tree. This counts, right? I think we can all agree it counts.
It checks a lot of the boxes, mm-hmm. So I think we're good here.
I'm willing to bet we won't find all of it, so it counts.
So they put out the fire. Now, Parsons' body is, it's not like pristine or anything. But, correct, yes. Far
from pristine.
But it's also not fully cremated, mm-hmm. Of course.
Right.
So they're like, well, I guess we should take what's left, mm-hmm. and ship that to New Orleans.
Why is it on this show about 20% of the time somebody ends up in a bucket? Why is that?
Listen, man, you don't make ghosts by accident, all right? so they take the remains. They do. They put them in an appropriately sized box, I assume. Those eventually do make it to Robert Parsons in, mm-hmm. New Orleans,
Did they put a note or something on there? About, or did that change the story about how exactly Grant Parsons died?
Can you imagine the phone call? It's like, listen,
hi,
we're the funeral home. Mm. I want to start this by saying we've cashed a check. So that's done. Having said that, the remains that you were expecting, mostly you will receive. We are putting a box of remains on the plane, and that's coming to you.
Mm-hmm. I know we sent you the coroner's report last week. You can expect an addendum to that this week. You're going to want to keep that one. This does not affect the cause of death, though. We are almost certain it does not affect.
Why are you being weird about this? I was expecting these ashes like 4 days ago. Like, what's happening? Can you tell me what's going on?
Where's gonna sleeping dogs lie? That's the.
I'd rather not.
That is the creed of the Undertaker. Is let sleeping dogs lie? That's actually how we practice. So
is it?
It is.
I wish I had the internet so I could Google see if that's true, but I can't. So okay, all right.
Okay. Huh. Bye bye. Bye bye. Now.
Wait. Bye-bye. I have more. Okay. Well, I guess we'll let sleeping dogs lie. So they send the remaining remains to Robert Parsons in New Orleans. Now Graham Parsons is buried, what's left of him is buried in Garden of Memories Cemetery in Metairie, Louisiana, mm-hmm. right outside of New Orleans.
Yes, I'm very familiar with all those weirdo above ground cemeteries they have.
Oh yeah, and there's just like a bucket with with some ashes in it. It's like, and some bones, some charred bones sticking out, and they're like, Graham Parsons, huh? You like? So Graham's body's in Louisiana, but his spirit is still in the place that he died. His ghost now haunts the Joshua Tree Inn in Joshua Tree National Park. Mm. In room number 8, where he died, there's a whole lot of door opening and closing.
Mm-hmm.
The doors also lock and unlock themselves pretty regularly. And cleaning staff are required to carry their cell phones with them when they clean the room in case they get locked in and can't escape.
Oh, oof.
So when we say, you know, doors locking themselves, it's a pretty serious locking.
Oh, yeah.
The mirror in the bathroom there tends to rattle violently against the wall. One couple who stayed in room number 9 one night, they went to sleep, only to be woken up around 2 a.m. with insanely loud folk music coming from room number 8. So they go to the front desk to complain, but there's no one manning the desk.
Mm-hmm, obviously.
Because why would there be? And so they go back to their room, but like on their, so this is one of the hotels where like the doors are on the outside.
Yep. You can see. Classic motel. Yep.
Yes. So they're going back to their room. They pass room number 8 and the music is fucking blaring and they're going crazy. They knock on the door. No one answers. Mm-hmm. They knock harder. No one answers. What the fuck is going on? They look through the window where the crack in the curtains are. The room is dark and completely empty. But the music continues until sunrise.
Oh.
One night in room number 10, a guest reported that he had been pinned down to his bed in the middle of the night while a ghost had its way with him.
Boy, that doesn't sound like Grant Parsons.
Well, the jury is out on if this is the Parsons ghost or a different ghost. Wishful thinking.
I've heard nothing but Grant Parsons being extremely respectful with people. And yes,
I think most people are willing to say I don't think this is Graham. Mm-hmm. I wanted to include it because I'm a completionist.
Right, sure.
But doing to be clear, like I don't know if that's Graham.
Graham's into that kind of stuff.
But apparently one of the interesting things about Graham Parsons was that he had different colored eyes. One green and one blue green. There's not a lot of documentation on this, so I don't know if I'm into this, but when the current owners of the Joshua Tree Inn bought the place, they met a sweet little kitty cat who just roamed onto the property, mm-hmm. who had one green eye and one blue green eye.
Oh.
They think it's possible this cat is the reincarnation of musical Wunderkind Graham Parsons.
Wow. Does it also do a lot of heroin?
So much heroin. They're like, how do you even shoot up? You're a cat. How are you doing this? It's amazing. It's one of those Hemingway cats. You gotta have thumbs. Mm-hmm. It's like, yes.
You already sleep all day. Why are you doing heroin?
I want to feel something. Is that how heroin works? Probably.
I think so. I'm not a good person to ask.
So that is the story of Graham Parsons and his ghost at the Joshua Tree National Park. Any questions or concerns, Patrick?
Man, just
you look so sick.
I also experienced a Graham Parsons type episode tonight.
Yeah, it's similar. Yeah. I would say very similar.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hope it turns out a little bit better for me. But if it doesn't, then you have my full blessing to fill up my casket with gasoline in the middle of a national forest.
Fuck yes. I was hoping you'd say that because I cannot think of a more fun way to celebrate a very dear friend's death than filling up his casket with gasoline and setting it on fire in a national park. Like, genuinely fucking amazing. That sounds great. Hey, if you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review and tell your friends. If you want more ghost stories, join Ghost Plus. We do this a lot more. We share more ghost stories with our members there. Go to isthisaghost.com/ghostplus. Ghost Plus, all one word. Is This a Ghost is a production of Smith Show Media. All the notes this week are taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes were from Patrick Dean. All the vomit sounds were also from Patrick Dean, who was very sick. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our social media team is Kai Valonis, Sam Murdoch, and Jennifer Jones. New merch, Burning Up the iTag store from Fox and Quill Studio. Go check it out on our site. And also follow Fox and Quill Studio, please, on Instagram at Fox and Quill Studio. Buy some of the stuff. It's really good. If you want everyone to like, I really want to confuse everyone I know in a way that they'll be too afraid to ask me about. We've got the merch for you. Thank you so much for listening. And I would say at this point, I do not do morphine in our treasured national parks, or else it's very possible you will end up on the next episode of Is This a Ghost?